Thank you for downloading the PR Week, PR Week's weekly podcast. For more podcasts as well as breaking news, visit prweek.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the PR Week, PR Week's weekly podcast about everything going on in the worlds of PR and communications. My name is Frank Washcook. I will be guest hosting this week's podcast, as our editor-in-chief, Steve Barrett, is on the West Coast for the week. I'm joined by our senior reporter, Diana Bradley. Diana, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
And our special guest for this week is Jason Schlossberg. He is the co-founder and the chief creative officer at Quidkin. Jason. Good to have you aboard.
Thank you, Frank. You know, this is actually my second time as a guest on PR Week podcast. I'm curious, has anyone else been a guest more than once?
I'll have to look it up. We could do a Saturday Night Live. Like,
well, that's why I was going to ask you, because I'm going to start telling people that I am the Alec Baldwin of PR Week podcast.
You know, you go for it, and if somebody decides to fact check you, we could build that into the post-truth world topic.
Exactly. It doesn't matter.
We could come back and revisit it. That's one of the topics we're going to be talking about this week, the post-truth world and the post-election landscape, as well as the 2017 outlook and what clients are looking forward to going into next year. We'll be talking about fake news a bit, and Diana is going to give us a rundown of some of the biggest news stories of the week. So first of all, Jason, thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
What have your clients been saying to you since the election, since November 8th?
I think that there's a lot of head scratching, and nobody really has any definitive ideas or answers. On one side, I think there's a lot of concern, I should say more of people are taking a wait-and-see attitude about business, especially if you're a global business, which is pretty much almost every business today. And then I think there's also the question of what can we learn from the election. Both positively and negatively, what should we be doing? Is there a positive lesson here, or is there a warning?
Mm-hmm. I could imagine that for a lot of folks who worked at agencies, their phones were ringing or buzzing, or their emails were going through the roof the morning after mm-hmm. the election. Was that the case with you?
No, actually, I think you know, obviously, I'm based here in New York City. I think honestly, there was a little bit of a quiet sort of. I don't want to say shock, but I think that there was definitely people were confused, and there was, I think it was actually a fairly quiet day. I mean, I had some client meetings, but there was some meetings that people didn't want to participate in. I think the day after for many people was a personal day in mm-hmm. terms of reflection about what was happening with our country, which yep. as much as we're professionals, I think we're all obviously citizens of this country, and it was important what happened one way or the other.
Yeah, and probably exhausted from staying mm-hmm. up until 4 a.m.
Absolutely.
Waiting for the results to come in, too. In the week since then, the market has responded really positively mm-hmm. to what they believe are going to be Trump's policies. Has that played any sort of role in terms of what your clients are expecting, how they feel, things like that?
You know, again, I still think for most of our clients, and we do work with a number of global clients, there really is a wait and see. I think you can't read anything from the markets these days, right? I mean, it's so high and it's so low on a day-to-day basis that all I think the market is telling us is how people are feeling today, really more than anything else. So, again, I think it's really hard to know what's going to happen in 2017. I think there's a lot of speculation, but if thus far is any indication, I think we can't really predict anything.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that's been a huge topic, looking back on the 2016 presidential election, is the emergence of fake news and fake news websites. And if you read BuzzFeed, the article they had last night about whether these fake news sites were used in some sort of coordinated mm-hmm. way by Russian intelligence operatives. And it seems like the wormhole just keeps going on this topic. You mentioned before that clients are really interested in this topic and looking for direction. So what are you hearing from them?
Sure. You know, it's interesting. I've been thinking a lot about this topic, and it's all related. You know, you started and you mentioned post-truth. You know, Oxford English Dictionary is named post-truth their 2016 Word of the Year. And I was just doing some research on it for my own interest, and I noticed that in 2006, Merriam-Webster's Word of the Year was truthiness. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's funny, 10 years ago, right, that was the Word of the Year. And truthiness, I think, and post-truth, and truthiness is, of course, the phrase created by Stephen Colbert. 2005 are very similar, and I think that the difference between then and now is really the scale and the scope of it, and I think that's really tracks with the rise of social media, and I think it rises with the fact that, and also I think at the same time with with the decline of obviously mainstream traditional media and the decline of the importance of influencers and thought leaders and experts in general. And so I think that, you know, we are at a moment in time where technology is facilitating this in a much larger capacity, but I think that we will weather that, and I think that, you know, the various social media platforms are going to be figuring out kind of what is fake news, what isn't fake news. But I think the question for brands is, what is our role going to be in that place? And I think that we've been complicit to a certain extent. I mean, if you think about just the rise of this notion of, like, the chief storyteller for organizations, right? I mean, when you think about a story, I mean, a story is a construction, right? And a story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has meaning. And the minute you do that, the validity of it is questionable. And so I think that as brands and as organizations and as communicators, we have to really not just sort of blame the Russians or blame social media, but I think kind of look at ourselves in a very critical way as how we're going to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think another interesting part of it too, and I'm forgetting which network I saw this on, mm-hmm. because I actually saw it on social media first, which might actually be part of the problem, mm-hmm. because the anchor was interviewing a lot of people who have supported Trump for months before he got elected. And one of his supporters was saying, well, of course tens of millions of people voted illegally. You see the stories all over Facebook. And there's this, you know, if you work in the news profession, there's this immediate gasp, like, knowing all the fake stories you've seen on Facebook mm-hmm. for a matter of months. But it sounds like from what you're saying that there's some optimism that Facebook or other web-based companies are going to fix the problem.
Well, I mean, I hope so. I certainly hope so as a citizen of the world. But I think it, the larger issue is about where people will get their information and what that information means and how organizations, how people can convey something truthfully. Mm-hmm. And I don't think in the future, unfortunately, it's going to be through traditional communications. I just don't see that as the way forward. I think, you know, even within our organization at Quitkin, you know, we oftentimes talk about our role is to help organizations articulate their best selves, but we are now moving forward and changing that and really talking about demonstrating your best self. Because I can say anything. A brand can say anything. And now with the tools that we have, no one's going to be able to check it whether that's true or not. But what we do as brands, how we live our values, I think, is the only way any individual is going to be able to judge the validity, the truth of what an organization is saying. So, for me, I think the future of communications is really going to be about doing much more than just saying and talking.
And what are some examples of ways they can do that?
So I think there's lots of different ways. I think a very recent one that I'm extremely interested in was what Patagonia just did a couple days ago. You know, they made the determination that they were going to donate all of their proceeds on Black Friday to environmental causes. That was important to them as an organization, and they anticipated it was going to be $2 million, and I read that it's going to be $10 million.
Yeah.
You're seeing certain ad networks blocking certain brands and news outlets that they don't believe sort of correspond with their thinking. But I don't think it's just about that. I think it's also about, you know, even just creating things, and I think the new kind of frontier in comms is actually going to be about almost what product design, building things that communicate your values and your meaning. And so I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And I think we're going to continue to talk and we're going to continue to say, but I don't see how that's going to move the needle with consumers or with anyone these days.
Mm-hmm. And that's, if you look at the Patagonia example, I mean, mm-hmm. that's resulted in a lot of positive headlines for mm-hmm. that company. I think that despite the boycott from, quote-unquote boycott from Breitbart, I think Kellogg's is probably earned some respect from a lot of people for mm-hmm. the decision they made about that. It seems like the two have to work hand in hand, though.
For sure.
They have to push the news out about these things as well. Would you agree with that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't think that, you know, the communication industry is going to shut down tomorrow. I think we're going to continue to do that. But I think that if we don't take stock of where we are, and we don't take stock of the reputation that we have, the reputation that the media has, the various tools that people have to filter whatever it is they want to hear and see, and the fact that facts don't mean what they used to mean, I think that, you know, if we continue as we are, you know, that's really the definition of insanity. So I think we're going to see a lot more and interesting types of communication strategy. I think we're going to see a return to experience. I think we're going to see, like I said, a return not to stunts, but to brand gestures in very big and meaningful ways, because it's very hard to, quote unquote, spin that. You know, I'm going to see with my own eyes, I'm going to make my own judgments, and it's really, I think it's hard to make that up.
Okay. 2017, right around the corner, a month away, exactly. What else are your clients and the folks at your agency looking forward to in the new year? What are they expecting?
You know, I think I think sort of following the logic of what I was just talking about, I think that the lines more so than ever before have been blurred, and I think that if you're in the PR profession, whether you're at in-house in a brand or at an agency, I think the ability to really kind of cross boundaries and really explore with different types of channels, different types of tactics, different types of ideas to really kind of help your client or your managers live their values, I think that's what we're going to see in 2017. And I think that is extremely exciting. And that's what we're looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. What do you see happening in the worlds of digital, social, things of that nature?
I mean, I think that's our fastest growing area of business. I was just in a meeting earlier this week, and the client asked, you know, do we do just traditional PR for some clients, and do we just do social for some clients? And the answer is yes, but I think that that's increasingly not becoming the norm. That it's so important that those elements be integrated. And so we're seeing, you know, a confluence of obviously a lot, I should say, a continuation of influencer engagement, a lot of social content, a lot of paid social kind of supporting that, and really sort of building, I think, you know, kind of a channel agnostic program, you know, for our clients.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. All right, Diana, give us a rundown of some of the bigger news that's happened this week.
Sure. So there's been a couple of people moves. Candace Mueller, she's the VP of Global Communications at Hyatt Hotels. She departed the company after 1 year. Hyatt is recruiting a replacement for her. And in the interim, the team there is covering her duties.
And where was she at before she moved over to Hyatt?
Before that, she worked at PepsiCo in various roles since 2006. Most recently, she was Senior Director for PepsiCo North America's Nutrition Communications and Community Relations. So it'll be interesting to see, mm-hmm. you know, where she goes next.
PepsiCo is like GE in a way, where it's just this huge network of alumni everywhere,
yeah.
working all across the marketing industry.
Yeah, definitely. Another people move, We Communications brought on Stephanie Marchese as president of their health sector in Eastern Region. She will oversee the firm's North American Health Group and its Eastern U.S. region, which includes the firm's New York and Boston offices. The position is newly created, and she will be based in New York, reporting to Cass Sells, who is the North America president for WE.
Right. And, of course, she's a veteran of Fleischmann-Hillard and GCI Group and Cohn & Wolf before that, and actually worked on the merger of GCI and Cohn & Wolf years ago.
Yes.
Which I actually reported on years ago as a reporter, and I remember
yeah.
it. Yes. Dating myself.
In other news... Wednesday night, the longtime Bersenrestellar executive, Pat Ford, received the Alexander Hamilton Medal at the Institute for Public Relations annual dinner in New York. As part of his acceptance speech, he said, "Being a good listener is the most important part of our work."
I think Pat is probably... Do you know Pat Ford?
Not personally, no.
Pat is probably thought of as one of the PR industry's really good guys. For lack of a, you know, more specific
mm-hmm.
term. I think he probably would get the Good Guy Award if people voted on it year after year. Interesting
career. There should be a Good Guy Award.
There should be.
Yeah.
There should be. Were you at the event, the IPR event?
No, I wasn't, but you guys should add the Good Guy Award to PR Week Awards.
We should. That's a terrific idea. I'll kick that one upstairs.
Yes, and then earlier in the day yesterday... Golin CEO Fred Cook made a very blunt statement at the IPR Research Symposium about what communicators need to do in the next 5 years. He said, My outlook on the future of PR is simply that PR needs more balls, and I translate balls to mean courage.
All right.
So that was quite a statement.
We're a PG-13 podcast now. Jason, how do you feel about that? Do you agree?
I completely agree, and I think, I didn't say it exactly in that way, but I think, you know, when I think about, PR right now, we try to convince people. We try to, we're sort of at the behest of journalists to kind of write the stories that we hope that they want to write. And I think we need to be much more active in our communication. And perhaps that's similar to saying have balls, although I wouldn't normally use that phrase. But I think it's the same idea.
Yeah. Great. PR Week named our Hall of Fame 2016 inductees. And on Monday, we will be awarding them. And they include Margie Booth, founder and chairman of M. Booth, Lisa Caputo, who is EVP and Chief Marketing and Communications Officer for the Travelers Companies, David Drobis, former CEO and Chairman Emeritus of Ketchum, Steve Harris, partner of McGinn & Co., and he was also former VP Global Communications for General Motors, John Anoda, senior consultant from Fleshman Hillard, and Patrice Tanaka, co-founder of Patrice Tanaka & Co., CRT Tanaka, and Padilla CRT. So congratulations, everyone.
All right, and they will be officially going into the Hall of Fame on Monday night after a long day of PR Week Awards judging.
PR Week also released our Best Places to Work winners. Large agency winners were Golin, Porter Novelli, and Zeno Group. Mid-sized agency winners were Spectrum, Race Point Global, and M Booth. Small agency winners were RBB Communications, Praetel, and Davies Public Affairs. And in-house winners were Astellas, Aflac, and Mayo Clinic.
Okay. Quitkin was a past winner.
We actually were... We were the winner in the small agency category the first year, the inaugural year, of the PR Week Best Places.
Inauguration is on everybody's mind.
Yes, yes, the inaugural year, and it's and I congratulate all the winners. Being a part of helping to build our culture, I know how hard it is to maintain consistency, especially as you're growing. Mm-hmm. And so congratulations to all of them.
What's unique about a small firm in terms of being a good place to work and to, any obstacles that a big firm might not have or a mid-sized firm?
Well, I think there's no question that there are positives and negatives in all categories. I think for us, the great thing about being smaller, and we're not really small now. We're kind of right at that cusp between small and mid-size. Mm-hmm. But I think when we were smaller, there's the ability to have an idea and a vision and then to execute on that almost instantaneously. And when I talk with people and I interview people who have worked at much larger agencies, they say that it's harder to be entrepreneurial. Decisions take a lot longer, et cetera. So I think that there's that benefit. I also think at a smaller agency, you inevitably create this scenario of self-selection where a lot of the same types of people, I don't mean from like a cultural perspective, but from let's say like a worldview around work or a personality or something like that, they sort of self-select that as a similar type of environment. So you have, I think, a lot more consensus, but as you get bigger, and we're experiencing this now, you can't all have the same exact type of people. It's just no way that works, especially when you're in multiple countries. And so as you start to get more and more people, you realize that creating a best place to work is not easy. You know what I mean? And you have to sort of really think about how you create inclusion, how you create opportunities for people who learn differently, who work differently to excel in that environment. And so for large agencies, I don't know how they do it. It's really, really, I imagine it's very difficult.
Interesting that you brought that up since there's been so much talk about bubbles in the past few weeks. And you would think that that would exist maybe in groups of bigger agencies as well.
You know, it could be. I've been out of the big agency game for a very long time. You know, this is our 10th anniversary this year at Quitkin. But I think you could have bubbles in small organizations and definitely in big ones for sure.
Mm-hmm. Jason, thanks again for joining us.
Appreciate it.
Diana, thanks for being here. And this has been the PR Week for December 2nd. Thank you, and join us again next week.